we want that to be an option for them. You know, if they want to leave the farm, that's fine. But if they want to stay, we want to be able to provide them with something that's sustainable that they can stay. Because so many, you know, second, third generation farmers, the kids coming from these farms have to go get jobs in town because staying on the farm is not an option. They can't make the money. They can't support their families farming. And that's what we want to create for our kids is, if you want to farm, you know, we've figured out how to do it, and you can farm and you can make a living and you can support your family without having to do without things, because farmers are the ones feeding America, and they shouldn't be living, having to live below their means because you can't make money on a farm.
It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
Well, we talk about sustainability. I'm going to talk about sustainability in a different way right now, and that is sustaining enterprises of farming, of families staying together, so that there can be an enterprise, there can be a connection with the farm and farming operations for generations to come. So we think not only about, I think, some of the environmental aspects of sustainability, but in keeping the thing together and keeping the family engaged and working together. We have a unique story today. And for that, I'm going to Arkansas, and I really want to welcome a couple of sisters who are part of the Williams Angus Beef, and they are going to explain to us how they put that together with their dad and their mom, and they've got their own farms. And I want to welcome Joe Beth Evans and Maggie Davidson, and welcome to Farm to Table Talk.
Thank you.
So I want to ask you about this. So you both have left the farm. You went to college. You are involved in other careers. And how did this come about that you back to try to connect farming operations to create this enterprise, which we're going to have you explain a little bit, but is Williams Angus Beef. Joe Beth, how did that happen?
So after we went to college, like my sisters, you know, said earlier, that we went and got married and had our own farms. And there was a period of time where we were not really involved in the farm. We definitely weren't working together, other than a couple of times a year when we got together and worked the cattle and stuff. But my dad had two girls, which he was highly disappointed when I came along. He was really, because I'm the youngest, he was really hoping for another boy or a boy. And he didn't have any choice. He had two girls, and he made us work just like you, a father would take his son out and work. That's what we grew up doing. We were driving around on the farm when we were super young, feeding cows. Our dad worked really hard. So a lot of days he wouldn't get home until after dark. So my sister and I would go feed. I mean, that's some of my earliest memories was our mom cooking dinner and us going out and feeding the cows. And we didn't see it as child abuse or child labor. It was just our contribution. And growing up at that time, we, you know, our life looked very different from the lives of our friends, you know, that might have lived in town. And so at times it looked like, you know, maybe a little envious of that life of not having to work on the farm. And I know for me, like, I loved my animals. I loved doing all things. I had no intentions of ever having a farm. None whatsoever. It was too labor intensive for me. You know, that was my view growing up. But once we grew up and have children of our own, we really can see the value of farming. You know, just kind of step back away from it and look and see the what we learned and the people we became from lessons on the farm. And it really has made us want to come back together, form something as a family. So we have, like I said, my dad's farm, then me and my husband's farm and her husband's farm, bringing those together to really make something that is sustainable in the sense that this is something that our kids can take hold of after they graduate and keep going for years to come.
So Maggie, when you were getting off the school bus and needing to go out and feed the cows with Joe Beth, do you ever have those little kid tendencies to saying, I'm working harder than she is, you know? Or, you know, it just seemed to me that there'd be this kind of like kid thing that there comes a stage again, like Joe Beth was saying, you don't think there's any way I'm going to be a farmer. You know, it's not all fun when it's cold and rainy and you still have to go out and feed the cows. But there had to be mixed feelings when you jumped off the school bus and you had to go put your chore clothes on and say, come on, Joe Beth, we got to go get this done.
Right. So it is work and you do have mixed feelings. And that's hilarious that you say that, because she spent all her time trying to figure out how not to do the work. And then, but that's just how we grew up and that's who we are. And that plays into our strengths. So yes, I did far more work than she did. And that was just the way it was. And there were times when I got frustrated with it too, but she was more the, oh, I don't really love this. I don't want to do it. And I was more, let's just get it done because it has to be done. And I probably did love it a little bit more than she did. But like she said, then once you get away from it, you think it's terrible. And then you grow up, you have kids, and you're like, I have to raise my kids that same way that we were raised, because it worked for us and it helped us become the successful people that we are today. And yes, I worked more doing that, you know, maybe the labor than she did, but then that is what she's good at. She's good at making things work and getting things done in a different way.
I think anybody that has two in the family has one of one kind, one the other.
Yes.
And it's nice you eventually figure out how, oh, son of a gun, we kind of complement each other. Now, do you each have two kids each?
Yes.
So are they like that too? You know, they're very different from the other one?
Yes.
Well, see, you got some hope. They're going to help the farming enterprise go on. So when you were starting to do chores on that farm, I just have to ask, when you go out and like, you know, feed the cows, how old was it when you were still old enough to either jump on a tractor or eventually, you know, take the pickup out to kick some bales of hay off into the fields or something like that?
So we were pretty young. I started driving. We had a little Nissan pickup truck and we would tuck a coat behind us so that our feet would reach the pedals. And I was driving, I was probably fourth grade, so 10-ish. I was driving the truck. She was opening the gates, which was also always a fight of who had to open the gates. But we were doing it and we were feeding out of the back of the truck, and one would drive and one would get in the back and pour feed or flake hay, you know, off. And that's just what we did. And we were young and we were supervised. We weren't just like turned loose, but you know, dad's thing was you learn to do it. And he was a teacher. He was great at teaching us how to do those things. And he would sit by you while you learned, but you were going to learn to do it yourself because, you know, he's not always going to be there to help you.
But Joe Beth, she's mentioning someone missing from the conversation right now, your dad and I suppose your mom too. Was he a teacher off the farm as well? Was that an occupation or what?
No, he preaches some at our church. So that's probably the closest thing to being a teacher. I think what made him was a great teacher. And that's something that I definitely inherited from him, is having really high expectations. And if you have high expectations for your children, but you're not willing to take the time to actually teach them, that those two things just don't really go together. And so he did spend a lot of time teaching us to do things and making us redo things. And when we didn't meet that expectation, like, we knew about it, we would hear about it. And I remember, you know, Sis was talking about the little Nissan truck. We were supposed to feed like a certain number of buckets of feed. And we had an auger that we would fill the buckets up with, and we weren't that strong. We were, you know, earliest memory, she was 10 and I would have been 7. We couldn't really carry the buckets, a 5-gallon bucket when it was full. Yeah. And my dad made the note that, like, it told us that buckets weren't full. Like, they're supposed to be full buckets of feed. And so we got smart. And so we just filled them up as much as we could. And then we got coffee cans and finish filling them up. So there was like a mound, almost like an ice cream cone of feed. And so when we drove by him, he saw these like buckets of feed that were rounded over. But I think that that's what made, I think that's something that's very special about him, is that he had high expectations and stuck to those, even when I know it wasn't easy for him to, you know, and he probably got a lot of comments to other people that he was raising us like boys. I'm sure he was told that a lot.
Now, if I was going to come and visit your farm, or visit that farm where you both now have got other farms involved, but to your home place where you grew up and you were feeding cattle and everything, the little kids, what would it look like? I mean, I flew in from California, I get off a plane, I drive somewhere to whatever the nearest town is and find directions to get out to your farm. And I'm driving out to your farm. Describe to me what's it look like around there, and what would, and what's the farm look like when we get there? What's, you know, where the cows are and pastures and barns and so forth.
Well, back when we were little, my dad inherited part of this farm from our great grandpa. And so a lot of structures that he built, back probably, I hate to give it a time, but long, long ago, lots of old structures that were being utilized really well. My dad is very neat. So is my mom. So the place always looked very nice, humble.
Mm-hmm.
We, that little Nissan truck, was a truck that you would let a 7-year-old drive. So it was, you know, on the farm, of course. So just a very, very humble, place. We still do have a beautiful home, black cattle. My dad, we just recently started introducing some Charolais into the herd. But just a very quiet place, but also a place where you could tell a lot of work had been done.
Well, but again, if you drive down a road, go down a hard road, I suppose, to get to your place. And is it hilly, or is it flat around there?
So when you pull into the farm, it's pretty flat. And then there's a pretty big hill mountain behind it that's all wooded. And so you kind of go through the flat, and then just behind it, you see the woods. It is a little rolly because it is Arkansas. But it's flat for Arkansas. It doesn't look like Oklahoma, but it is a little rolly, but mostly flat with the mountain behind it.
So you have mother cows, you're raising the calves, and were they feeding the calves out, or were they sending them to a feedlot or something, or were you feeding the cattle out at that time?
So at that time, I believe we were just sending them to the cell barn. At that point, when they got old enough to go to the cell barn, then of course they most likely went on to a feed yard. It wasn't until the past few years that we started selling direct to the feedlots. And then it was just here in the last couple years that we started feeling like we didn't want to sell to the feedlot anymore, that we wanted to sell direct to consumer. And that being part of the other definition of sustainability, you know, not trucking our cattle far, taking this, going to a processing plant that's far off, but keep going to a processing plant that's close. So it's interesting to look back at the way we viewed farming in the 90s compared to how we're viewing farming today in our family, because it's very different.
Yeah. Well, now let's go ahead then, because you and your sister both went on to college. Then you got through high school, and I suspect from what you were saying, you weren't thinking at that time you were necessarily going to end up on a farm. You had all this unique experience growing up on a farm in Arkansas and feeding cattle when you were 9 and 10 years old. But you went off and you got degrees. And JoBeth, you're at the University of Arkansas right now. Yeah, are you in a program? What do you do at the University of Arkansas?
I work in the communication department, and I teach public speaking.
Well, no wonder you're doing such a good job speaking, and including on your list of researchers, checking out podcasts. So I'm glad I ended up being on the list. And then your sister became a kindergarten teacher. And now, and then you both ended up getting married to farmers. That's probably unusual right there, that anymore. There's not that many people that are into farming. And here you are back in it. And I think it's a good time for me to ask Maggie about that as well. Maggie, and you know, like I was saying, you both ended up after college or in college, married farmers. And so you find yourselves on farms again, and your parents still have the farm. When did it start occurring to you that there's something that you could do together, that you could have a family connection that has an enterprise that is based on farming, in this case, raising cattle, and find it is worth your while to be able to connect it all? How did that come to you?
So it's something that we'd always kind of wanted to do, I think. There was a time when we talked about doing it. We just didn't think we were ready. We didn't have the time. We weren't set up for it because it is time consuming to come together. But then obviously the pandemic happened. We had cattle that we couldn't get rid of. And it was decision time. Like, do we want to try this? You know, is it time? And we did it and it started working. And then the more we get into it, the more we're like, okay, we might be able to sell every steer we have this way, working together, and make it worth our while, because we can make more from it. We can benefit our community by doing it. We can provide people with what we've been feeding our family all these years. We can allow them to feed their families with it too. And also allow us to all work together and bring us closer together. And so it was kind of we have to try this and try to make it work.
There must have, I'm sure there's some second thoughts when you start looking at that, but one thing, JoBeth, all three of your, in these family connections, you all had apparently a cow herd, and I know Angus is in the name of it. So I assume that's predominantly black cattle that you have. Now, when you're each of the farms raising calves, are you putting them in your own feedlot? Are you taking the calves once they're weaned and grown to a certain level to some other feedlot where they're fed together? How does that go, that stage?
So we are doing it all except for the processing of the animal. So we're raising the animals ourselves, and then they're going to our dad's farm and he's feeding them, where they have access to hay and grass and fresh water 24/7. And he does a lot of the feed combinations and figuring out what is best for the animals during that time.
Now, are you raising some of the grain that you're using to finish them on, or do you have to purchase most of it?
We're having to purchase most of it.
So you're
set up to do that here in Arkansas.
Yeah, I mean, they grow soybeans and corn, but not nearly the quantities that, up in the northern part of the Corn Belt and that sort of thing. So you end up having these calves grown in each of these three different farms that are all family connection, and then they're finished back at your dad's farm. Well, then they have to be processed. You have to find some place to process those cattle. How did you solve that problem?
Well, that was, we started this. There were a lot of doors that were appeared to be closed, and we moved forward anyways, seeing that the doors could possibly close on us at any time. And that the biggest door being processing, that's been a word that's been brought up several times in our discussion of how can we do this and be successful. Well, who's going to process them? Because when the big processing plants closed, the smaller processing plants got very overwhelmed really quick with appointments. So we were able to get in at our local butcher, who is not a USDA certified butcher, but is one of the best around. we were able to get into him. We had been taking just our, you know, one or two here and there to him for the last several years. And was able to get in there. So that processing door opened. And then just recently, you know, my mom's always said, well, if it's meant to be for you guys to get into a USDA butcher, you know, if it's meant to be, it's going to happen. And if not, then, you know, that's just how it is. And a couple weeks ago, we got a call and we got in at a USDA butcher. So we, that door flung open pretty quickly and is going to allow us to sell our product USDA certified, which allows us to sell in smaller quantities, as well as to restaurants.
Boy, that's great, because when I talk to people around the country, that's the biggest issue, is trying to find processing. And in many states, they have maybe like one processor in the whole state that's even a possibility. And those independent ones are different. Every state seems to be working on trying to make a transition, to try to be able to, some regions have taken a couple states together, and they have an understanding that it's almost a substitute for USDA, that it's at those standards, but that can be used for, you know, both in state, but also a couple multi-states. So I think it's a really interesting area. And apparently there's USDA and in Congress, you know, they're continuing to look at legislation to try to find ways to make it easier to get more local operations going. So congratulations on doing that. So the product then is, you started at your farms, you've got these calves, you've fed them out, you can process them now, and the outcome from the processing are going to be cuts of beef, maybe, and all kinds of primal cuts and so forth. Are you having those frozen so that you can market them as frozen, or do you market them as fresh?
Yeah, we sell everything frozen, because that's how, when they process it, the halves and wholes, they process it, freeze it, and then people come to the processor and pick that up. The same thing will happen with the USDA certified beef. It'll be frozen as well, and then we can deliver ship however we want from there. But yes, everything is frozen.
You've got it in the freezer, and you've got a certain amount of packaging. And then how are you marketing? How are you selling those cuts to the, where does it go after you've got it processed?
Well, our marketing has been done. Word of mouth has been pretty, profitable for us so far, but also Facebook. We've been really trying to utilize social media to get the word out about our product. When this all started here in Arkansas, when we started this, there, you couldn't find beef at the grocery stores. You just couldn't find it. You would walk through the beef section at our stores and there would be nothing. And so people kind of panicked, and it just happened to be the same time that we were also panic about beef. That was ready, that was finished and ready to go to processing. And so it was kind of a trial by fire situation where we were giving it our best shot. And in the process, we got to put a lot of beef in freezers of people who also were panicked when they went to the store and couldn't find beef. And in that process, they've been like, oh, this is really nice. I can go to my freezer and have a freezer full of beef. I don't have to run into the grocery store. I don't have to really even think about it for the next 6 months to a year because I'm stocked. And so people, even though they may have done it out of panic in the beginning, it's also pushed them into a way of purchasing beef that they are really enjoying as well.
So you have a Facebook page. Are you able to take orders online?
Yeah. So the first several months of doing this, people were mailing their checks to us because they were local people. And some of them knew us, some of them did not, but they, for whatever reason, chose to trust us enough to put a check, a deposit in the mail to us to reserve their beef. So that's how we did it in the beginning. So now they can purchase a beef online, and it's all handled online. And we will have it up on our website real soon to where they can purchase straight from Facebook.
Well, that sounds great. Now, so I assume you had to kind of create some structures to be able to put everybody together. I mean, even if you are all in the family, somebody had to sit down and write this like as a business plan or saying, okay, you know, Maggie and Joe Beth and mom and dad, you know, we're each contributing this and this and this, and we're just outlining this is how we're going to the contribution of the product and split the cost and split the income. Did it require you to create an additional entity? Is this the sort of thing that you should create like an S-corp for the family that this enterprise is organized under, or is it more informal?
We're an LLC, so it's a partnership through an LLC, and that's how we launched all of this.
And so that LLC has a bank account and paying the processor and taking the money and filing the financial statements. And that sounds great. Now, can you envision when you look ahead on this, and it keeps growing like you hope it does right now, can you picture your kids being a part of this someday and wherever their journey takes them in life, that they are connected to this family enterprise in perhaps a similar way that the two of you are?
We want that to be an option for them. You know, if they want to leave the farm, that's fine. But if they want to stay, we want to be able to provide them with something that's sustainable that they can stay. Because so many, you know, second, third generation farmers, the kids coming from these farms have to go get jobs in town because staying on the farm is not an option. They can't make the money. They can't support their families farming. And that's what we want to create for our kids is, if you want to farm, you know, we've figured out how to do it, and you can farm and you can make a living and you can support your family without having to do without things, because farmers are the ones feeding America, and they shouldn't be having to live below their means because you can't make money on a farm.
You know, Joe Beth, if you look at where you've gotten right now with this whole process, and you were going to say, if you're going to go into this, be sure to think about this, or be sure to cover this particular item. What would somebody be able to learn from your experience to date, so that if they try to follow in your tracks and put a couple of the family members together into an enterprise like that, and what caution might you make for them?
That's a really great question. So when we started this, me, my dad, and my sister are all very strong-willed people. And so something we had to agree on before we ever really talked business anything was, we're not going to fight about this. This is not going to become a wedge. You know, basically, if at any point it starts to be an issue, it ends. It's not going to become a barrier between us and our family. So the first thing I would say is, it's not for everybody. And if you don't get along well with your family and you don't have the same values, and you don't work well together, then you should not do this, because there's so much communication that's necessary, and clear communication, that things can get go a little left sometimes. And so you have to be on top of it there. The second thing I would say is that this is a very full circle business. So we think about farmers a lot of times when we put them in a box, maybe what they look like, who they are, what their interests are. And what we have found is that if you want to be successful in this, you can't just be focused on feeding and breeding the stock and all that. It takes social media. It takes relationships with your customers. It takes organization. It takes business management. And it's not maybe what we thought farming would look like, but that's definitely what it takes. Because if you want to be that farmer that's in the box and just doing what farmers do, then you're going to have a hard time growing. And I think that's something that we have done well at, that I would love to see more people doing, is sitting the family down and saying, well, you do really good with interviews and you're really good with organization, which is my sister. Like, nobody ever thought that I should be the one that's keeping track of our books. Nobody asked, because we knew that that wasn't a good fit. But when it came to more of public relations, it was like, okay, obviously that's going to be me. And obviously dad's been in this for so long. He knows about feeding. Like, you have to have all the parts, and you yourself can't be all the parts. And that has made us work really well, because we're all very different, but we're all very driven.
Boy, there's a lot of organization, a lot of communications. And I mean, you have this experience that the two of you as sisters growing up on the farm, and your mom and dad, you've worked it out. You understand each other. And then you each married somebody. So you each have husbands that are involved with the operation now too. And you each have kids. And that's a lot of different personalities and way of looking at things and way of processing things. And I would imagine it takes some of you longer than others to get around the track and be ready with a new idea. And to recognize that all that communications that you have to do, that takes some patience and really be open to the fact that it doesn't. I'm putting words in your mouth here, I think, Maggie, but you're probably used to thinking about all these dynamics because you're working with the kids in the classroom too that all have different personalities. But just in your family operation, you know, I do a quick ad. You guys got a dozen or so different personalities now that in some way or another, they all work into this, including, I suppose, kids that are going to eventually, if not already, be like what you experienced. Not everyone's going to want to do chores and pitch in, let alone imagine that someday they're going to be involved in a farm again. So it just seems to me that takes a lot of patience to communicate. How do you do it? Do you all get together and have big family meetings, or do you have Zooms to pull everybody together and make sure you're on the same page?
Well, we already spend a lot of time together. So every Sunday after church, we go to mom and dad's, all of us, and we have lunch together every Sunday, and we've done it for years. And so we're together. We talk about stuff that way. We do a lot of phone calls. We have a few meetings, but we have four kids. So trying to have a formal meeting is super hard because we always have our kids, but we just make it work. And we email and call and text and get together. And we've just made it work so far.
Well, I think it's great. And I really appreciate hearing what you're doing, because it's the part of sustainability that is often overlooked. We have a lot of conversations, and you've heard them before on Farm to Table Talk, about sustainability, that is about sustainability because we're looking at climate change or environmental impacts. And those are all really, really important. But what is often glossed over a little bit is that you have to have an enterprise has to be able to be sustainable and able to keep going. And I really admire what you're doing, that you're being innovative and you're pulling the family together. And I think that if we look down the road, what gives you the most optimism about the course that you're on? And if we're going to check back in with you, you know, 5 years down the road, what do you hope that looks like? What's going to be the situation that you hope to see yourselves in a few years?
That's a good question. Our kids will be older, obviously, at that point. My son will be a teenager, and then our littlest ones will be old enough to actually kind of understand a little bit more about what's happening. I hope they see that this is actually a profitable thing. I think growing up, a lot of times, at least for me, maybe that's why I wasn't real motivated to do the work, but I didn't see the money. I didn't see that we can make money. And a lot of times as farmers, we're just like, yeah, we're farmers. And like, it's almost like it's a hobby. It's just something that we love so much that we do it regardless of if we're going to make money or not. A lot of people are breaking even. And for a kid to work, like, they need to see the fruits of their labor. They need to be able to see that, like, okay, we're out here feeding. My son and I, a lot of times, are the ones that do beef pickup days. So we're the ones that go and meet our customers and help them load their beef and stuff. And he has seen the exchange of money after he's helped, and it kind of brings it full circle for him too. You see the calf being born. He's been with my dad when he feeds, and then the processing, and then us getting paid for that. And I think that if we want to talk about farming, but not talk about how we're supposed to make money doing this, like, that's kind of the point, you know, like, it is to produce stuff and to make a living. And I hope it's that our kids actually see all the value in it, and that they're seeing that we are also making money and being able to afford things that they want to do in life. You know, help pay for their college, which none of them want to do at this point, but, like, you know, be able to pay for college, pay for maybe private basketball lessons, or just getting their school clothes and realizing that, like, hey, this process allows us to do this in life. But that would be my thing, is for it to be something that's profitable, and that our kids start to recognize that and see it for what it is.
Maggie, how about you?
Yeah, I agree. I just think that we kind of grew up not really, farming is hard work. It's a lot of work. And if you don't see basically the cash flow, you're not going to want to keep doing it. And, you know, if you can't make a living doing it, there's kind of no point in doing it. So hopefully that our kids see that. And our kids are starting to get really into showing animals, and having this hopefully will help provide them with better quality animals that they can show, and support financially them doing that, and get them more involved and more educated, because you learn so much growing up on a farm. And I want them to see that. And I want to see that you're not limited to just taking your cows to the sale barn on Wednesday and hoping for the best. Like, I want them to see that they can take their farm and do whatever they want with it, instead of just going off of what the market is and those kinds of things, because that's scary.
You know, just listening to you too made me flash back, because I can remember when I was probably the age of your kids, I got to buy a registered Angus heifer, and her name was Erica, which was the first time I ever heard that name. It's kind of, there's other, but that was a registered name. It was Erica something or other. And kept her, and she had a lot of calves in several years. And eventually I sold her, and I used the money to pay for tuition to junior college the first year. And it never really dawned on me till I'm having this conversation with you of going back to that point. I didn't appreciate it at the time. Probably I just took it for granted. And now all these years later, I can see how that really mattered and how important. Well, I admire what you're doing. Now, if people want to keep track of where you are, what you're doing, learn more about the product that Williams Angus Beef is going to have available, how do they find you?
They can go to our website, williamsangusbeef.com, or they can find us on Facebook, and that's Williams Angus Beef as well. Where you can also find us on TikTok and Instagram.
Wow. Who's doing that?
Do what?
Who's doing that?
Oh, that's me.
that's a lot of social to keep track of.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Well, you know, I really appreciate what you're doing, and I'm glad for us to have an opportunity to come to Arkansas and hear your story. And I think there's other people I know all over the country that have similar thoughts in mind. And I think, again, one of the things that's really unique of what you're doing is putting your families together. You're all one big family, but finding a way to kind of keep the enterprise going and being involved in agriculture. And we haven't even talked about much about the fact that the consumers are getting a really good product, that they're able to know who grew their cattle. When they're enjoying the beef, they know how it was raised and who raised it. And that's a really important contribution too. So I want to thank you both. We've been talking to Jo Beth Evans and Maggie Davidson and about Williams Angus Beef. Thanks for being on Farm to Table Talk.
Thank you
for having me.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson. If you like what you hear, go to farmtotabletalk.com and follow us on Facebook and Twitter, or go to iTunes to subscribe and give us a review and a rating. Thanks for listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.